college football. This is the College Football Connection Podcast with Marty Jenkins and Alvin Reed on 101 ESPN.
Welcome in, folks. College Football Connection. Marty Jenkins here alongside my man Bradford Bruns on Twitter, on X, at Game of Bruns. My man Alvin Reed cannot be with us this week. He is writing busy day to St. Louis American. Check out his stuff online. His Twitter handle, at capital R, EID, Jayhawks. All right. We were talking before we hopped on, Bradford. Mm-hmm. 84 and 72 is our overall total.
Like that collectively. Yes, yes.
We, last week, you know, Alvin had a really good week, but overall we're still 12 games over 500, which is money in the bank. Look to build on this week, maybe jump 20 games over 500. We were talking off air. I mean, this weekend, gosh, I can't remember the last time the Red River showdown has been this big. I mean, coming into it, you have two top 10 teams. Now, given Oklahoma with Venables, they haven't played anybody, you know, but they still have a really, really good defense. Dylan Gabriel, solid quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
They're number one in most Big 12 categories offensively. But as I mentioned, haven't played anyone. This is a tough read on this one. But, you know, you look at this line, Texas 6.5, they're one of the big stories in the nation this year. This has gone from 68.5 to 60.5. It has dropped a full 8 points.
Very intriguing.
Very. And there's a lot of games like that this week where that's the case, where that movement has been so large. But in this one, not many people, despite being only 6.5 point dogs, are giving the Sooners a shot in this one just because of what has transpired thus far this season with Texas going, you know, to Tuscaloosa, kind of putting the exclamation point on that to start the campaign. But I really like, and I usually go the opposite in this way, the defenses in these in this contest are very solid. Give me the under in this one. I think that's a lot of points. And I really think this is the year where Oklahoma comes in there. Texas, top dog right now almost. I think the Sooners, and I think Gabriel's going to keep it up, and Brett Venables' defense will settle in, I think, in the second quarter maybe. Maybe off to a rough start, but I do think they settle in. I like the under and the Sooners in this one, Bradford. And before you go, Bradford, I just want to give Alvin's pick. Alvin has the Sooners as well, but he is over 60. Where are you at?
So many people in the country not feeling, Marty, not feeling those Sooners heading into this matchup. And mm-hmm. you referenced, of course, the big-time nature of this one for the final time, Big 12 style in the yep. regular season, these two teams getting together in the rivalry contest. And it's actually just the third time overall between these two programs that both have opened at 5-0 entering this particular contest. Mm-hmm. But I'm with you insofar as we have not seen that body of work from OU against prohibitive favorites.
Yeah.
Texas is that in this instance, and rightfully so. The Longhorns, what you love about that offense is the fact that there is so much balance now. You have Ewers, who has been excellent in his second season there in Austin, and he has receiving threats galore down the field. I'm very interested, Marty, to see how this one is going to play out as far as in year two under Brent Venables. This Sooners defense has suddenly been a revelation. Mm-hmm. Last year it was anything but. Last year this group got trounced 49-0 by Texas in the Red River rivalry game.
Unreal.
2023, different story. Will the physicality be there in the secondary in those one-on-one matchups down the field? I also agree that in the second half, that's when you're going to see the Venables-led defense make those proverbial adjustments. Will it be too late by that point? Because
yeah.
OU isn't quite as game as Texas has been this season when it comes to being able to churn out those yards on the ground. I love the interior of that Texas defensive line. If the Longhorns could get into the backfield pretty early in this one, we may see a bit more of a lopsided affair than a lot of people think.
So, where are you going in terms of the over-under?
At the same time, OU has been too darned good against, yes, inferior competition to not give the Sooners a great, credible chance in this ballgame. You know the atmosphere is going to be electric. You also know, I think, that with just how efficient the quarterback play has been at that position for the Sooners this year,
yeah.
I'm really not about to sit here and say that it's going to be a matter of Ewers just drastically outplaying his counterpart there. I think that OU is able to do enough in the second half based on that defense to reel the Texas offense in. That number is a little more tricky now as it relates to the over-under. I actually would have gone well under earlier in the week, but it has since shifted. OU, though, able to not take this one outright, covering the number. I'm still going to actually go over on the points, though, because of the offensive playmakers here.
So you and Alvin are the same on that front, Sooners and the over. I am taking Sooners and the under. That's a fascinating, one of the biggest matchups of the year. It's an 11 o'clock game also. Oh, Bradford, we disagree on this one.
You think?
So one of the bigger stories thus far has been your Mizzou Tigers. And, you know, coming into the season, their over-under was 7.5. They're almost there, although the schedule the next, you know, six games is significantly more difficult than the first six games. But this contest in particular, you mentioned a good point before we hopped on, just how motivated is Georgia, or excuse me, just how motivated is LSU going to be when they come to Como? Because, you know, we saw what happened last week.
Right.
In Oxford, a shootout. Okay.
Shellacking in the fourth quarter. That defense should be embarrassed. Yeah. Was embarrassed.
Yeah. One of the worst in the conference, maybe the worst in the country. but now they have two losses. Just how motivated will they be when they come into Como? Now, I think these two teams aren't even on the same planet. That's my opinion on this, but it's going to be up to Kelly, and I'm not a Kelly fan at all, to get them motivated for this contest. Because if LSU has zero losses right now or one loss right now, I think this point spread is completely different.
Oh, yeah.
And I think they blow the doors off Mizzou. But just how motivated will they be? Jaden Daniels last week had close to 650 yards, I think. They scored 50 points. Best offense in the SEC. I think LSU, if they're not motivated at first, I still don't think they did themselves in that big of a hole. Crowd's going to be pumping. 11 a.m. here soon. LSU, though, blows them out the water.
Blowout!
And the over.
I have been cautiously optimistic about this start for the Missouri Tigers. Mm-hmm. Weeks ago, I would not have stood here and said, oh yeah, Mizzou is going to be able to hang, even in Columbia, against LSU.
Right.
Post-Middle Tennessee State, we have observed a full-scale transformation. And yes, I know that the competition has been there. I know that besides K-State notwithstanding, you're not going to get overly ecstatic about a win of basically a touchdown against Memphis in a neutral site location. You also should have some qualms about that game last weekend versus Vanderbilt going into the fourth quarter still being somewhat in question. But the rate, Marty, at which this offense is moving the football right now, Brady Cook, Luther Burden, looking like arguably the most dangerous skill position player in the country, not named Marvin Harrison Jr., I kid you not. And then the running game, too. The two-headed monster of Nate Pete and Cody Schrader. You tell me how on the road, motivation notwithstanding, this LSU team, this LSU defense, littered with NFL-level talent, but we haven't observed it. This team basically proceeded to sleepwalk the defensive unit throughout the second half of that FSU game. It struggled against Arkansas. We know what happened, surrendering 21 points against Ole Miss. I don't think that we can concede, oh, all of a sudden LSU is going to be motivated when the SEC West is no longer there, let alone all of the preseason lofty college football playoff aspirations. Those are all gone. Will this team show up? You know the offense is going to be there. Jaden Daniels, as you'd stated, responsible for the second most total yardage per game in the nation. It comes down to, quite honestly, in my mind, who's going to have the ball last? LSU right now being favored by 6.5 at last glance. 6.5?
Yep.
I think it's a little disrespectful, honestly, to Mizzou. I really do, because at this point in time, over the last couple of weeks, Brady Cook, this is staggering to say, it's staggering for so many people during fall camp and during the first couple of weeks of the season who were clamoring for nothing but reps for Sam Horn. He's played better than anybody else in the nation. He has 11 touchdowns to no interceptions, and not only is he taking care of the football, he is actually proceeding well beyond just those intermediate routes. And it's not just a situation right now where you're targeting Luther Burden to excess. You've got Theo Weiss, who has come up big time in a secondary role previously from Oklahoma. You've got Cooper. You've got Stevens in the flat coming out of there as a tight end, too. The weapons are abundant. This one, Marty, may actually scale well beyond 4 hours of game time. I kid you not. And I am well over on the over this time around.
And Mizzou.
Yes.
Mizzou and the over. But let me ask you this. Do you really think the next six games, his stats and his, you know, number one, number two in the nation and all this, all that, that's going to keep up at that same rate against the level of competition the next six games? Do you see him keeping it up, or do you see him sliding back and scaling back significantly?
Significantly, no. Somewhat, absolutely, because all of a sudden, the next contest, looking ahead, you shouldn't, but if you're a fan, if you're an observer, you have to. Kentucky suddenly looks a lot more dangerous, does it not?
Nice win last week.
And then heading into the latter portion of October, November, no. Brady Cook is not going to be approaching 400 yards passing week in and week out, which he did. He set a new career high against the Commodores. Mm-hmm. But the balance and the innovation now in the offense, in the system, health as well, has been a factor. And while Cook isn't taking the ball down and running as much as he did in that first half versus the Wildcats because of the hamstring issue, you are seeing what this team is able to do, the multifaceted nature, and Luther Burden is a game changer. When you have a player with that sort of transcendent talent, it completely flips the equation in your favor, and now you're starting to get more of that classic home field advantage at Memorial too.
What I was going to say, Bradford's Mizzou and over. Alvin is also rolling Mizzou and over, so you guys, again, are siding with each other. I'm just interested. I do like Cook. The level of competition in the first several games, you know, in fairness to him, though, we looked at those games and said L's for some of them heading into the season.
Sure.
I'm just really interested to see, despite, and you mentioned the NFL-level talent, that's why they're favored by that. The defense sucks, but they still have playmakers on both sides of the ball that are going to be playing in the league. I'm just very interested to see how Mizzou fares in this one, and I think we'll have a good telling very early on in the game, you know, whether or not this is going to hit the over or under. But you and Alvin rolling with MIZ in the over. I'm taking LSU in the over.
And which of those defensive units, Mr. Jenkins, will be able to come up with a turnover, do something to really assert itself, especially in the third quarter, waging on into the fourth? Because Mizzou's defense, against regardless of the level of competition, has been pretty proficient, and even last week was better about getting off of the field on third down. However, you need to force more of those turnovers. So if you can't come up with muster something special to really throw off Daniels, if only temporarily, I think that's where LSU could ultimately, with the sheer talent involved, take over. Mizzou has to be active defensively and force some things.
Speaking of something special, I know you're busy, but were you able to tune in last week to the last couple minutes of that game in Durham versus the Irish and Duke?
I was, as a matter of fact, buddy. You know it.
I mean, I you know, put a fork in him, fourth and, you know, 15, 17, whatever, and then he ran for that first down.
Mm-hmm.
Type of leadership you need, season-saving play.
Yes.
With potentially a chance at the Final Four still with USC coming into town this weekend. Got a survivor's Louisville, which we're going to talk about in a second. And then for him to wait to show what a class act he is after the game, to go see, you know, Leonard coming out of the medical tent.
Absolutely.
I just love Sam Hartman.
He's special.
He is special. And, you know, they're still in the hunt despite that loss to Ohio State. They got to win this weekend. You know, they're undefeated. Louisville, that is. Haven't played anybody. Just won 13-10 over the Wolfpack. This has gone from 6.5, stayed at 6.5, but it's gone from 56.5 to 53.5.
Under.
I know. You like the okay. Well,
I'm just saying, yeah, as far as the slate of big-time matchups this weekend, that's what we're seeing, you know? That's the trend.
Mm-hmm. This is going to be another tough one for Notre Dame, but my locks have been good thus far, and this is my lock right here, the over in this game.
Yeah.
I think we could see it close to halftime, Bradford. But just like last week, and talk about a bad backdoor cover, depending on which side of the coin you're on, because Duke was... Duke was 6.5-point dogs, and then Notre Dame went for 2 at the end and won by 7. Ouch. I took Duke. I'm also taking Louisville to cover this one. Place is going to be rocking. I think they're comparable teams, to be honest with you. Duke is a little better than Louisville, but the place is going to be rocking. It's going to be another tough road game for the Irish. I see lots of points on both teams in this one. Give me the over big time, and also give me the Wolfpack, Louisville, to cover the 6.5.
Yeah, first time that the Cardinals under Jeff Brohm obviously have started a season 3-0 in conference play as an ACC member. We've seen a couple of teetering stretches perhaps against the Power 5 opponents. I'm sorry, I'm not going to get excited here by squeaking past NC State, a team that doesn't even know what it's going to do at the starting quarterback position heading into this weekend. I'm on the opposite end of the spectrum here insofar as I see the Fighting Irish absolutely bludgeoning, bludgeoning Louisville in this one. I don't really see that many things popping out at me. The competition, the fact that, yeah, it's been nice. Louisville's actually fared fairly well on the road, even just two road contests remaining, which would seem to bode pretty well for the postseason aspirations there too. But now that Notre Dame was able to lock that down versus Duke in the waning seconds. Mm-hmm. The slip up against OSU, you know what? We're going to move beyond it. We're not going to dwell on it, spend too much time. I was wildly incorrect about the over-under total in that contest, but there's so much confidence here for me, Marty, in particularly Sam Hartman and also the balanced attack when you talk about the different ways, the many different ways in which Notre Dame can get the business done. And for Louisville, it's not only a litmus test, it's going to be telling you what exactly I think you can expect from this team as the fall carries on. I'm not sold whatsoever. I am all in on Hartman and Notre Dame here. Well over, and give me Notre Dame to cover that sucker.
All right, well, Mr. Alvin Reed, Notre Dame covers as well, but he's taking the under in this one. So you have Irish and the over, Alvin, Irish and the under, and myself, Louisville to cover and the over. We talked about Bama a few minutes ago briefly. They're 7.5-point favorites to open the week, down to 2.5, Bradford. And the over-under, as we mentioned in the first game, the Red River Showdown, almost moves 8 points. 53.5 to 46.5 now.
That's too low. Oh, that's too low.
I agree. I think Bama's starting to settle in now. You know, we saw what happened earlier in the year. They're starting to settle in. A&M, they haven't played anybody. I think one of my also locks of the week is going to have to be Bama to cover this one big time. And for the over to hit big time, I think Bama could score 46.5 themselves.
Technically, these two teams are still alive for the college football playoff,
sure,
right? Well, here's the deal, though. Here's the rub. The team that squanders this opportunity, clearly no two-loss squad has ever made it to that point. This is huge, even though we're talking about early October. And I would agree with you about certain aspects of Bama settling in. We still don't know very much as far as the evolution or progression of Milroe when you're only tasked with throwing the ball 12 times in a single game.
Yeah.
The defense, though, this is what we know. Very, very good last week, picking up the 4 sacks, consistently getting into the backfield, and slowly but surely, it seems like one of those uncommon, atypical Saban teams that during the course of the season, when you don't have a clear standout, especially under center, it takes a while for everything to coalesce and to get going. But in terms of peaking, usually this squad will peak at the right time. It feels that way to me with Alabama this year, particularly in light of how up in the air the SEC East, the SEC West, the SEC in general is. In this instance, to me, it's Alabama in a runaway because once again, I'm not feeling A&M's body of work thus far. I'm not just believing as much as I do in Alabama in this case. I'm a little surprised that that number, as far as Alabama being favored, isn't closer to the 10. I really am.
I agree as well. It has dropped significantly. So let's see, just to double check here, you are going Bama, and where were you at on over-under?
Over. Oh,
big
yeah.
Time.
46
big
and
time.
A half. Are you kidding me?
Yeah,
oh,
it's unreal. Bama and over. And I was taking a look here. If Bama can win this one, you know, which they should, their next 3 games are at home against Arkansas, Tennessee, and LSU, all winnable games. At Kentucky will be tough, but they should win that one. Then the Iron Bowl, they're in good position, Bradford.
They really are.
So after that early season loss to Texas, they would have been a good futures bet to make, especially with other teams losing. So they're going to be in a pretty good spot, I think, in the next month or two.
And retroactively, that statement win by Texas versus Alabama improves with each passing result.
Yes.
Yeah, that you see from Roll Tide. And if ever there were a chance for Milroe to actually display that deep ball and to get aerial, this is the weekend.
This is the weekend. Where's my man Alvin at on this one? Alabama covers, and he is going under 46 and a half. Under.
Doesn't believe in QB1. Doesn't believe.
Staying in the SEC, Georgia scrapes by last weekend, which would explain.
What's happening there?
Yeah. Well, this started at 24. It's down to 14 and a half. I think Georgia absolutely rolls in this contest, maybe wins by 30 to 35.
Ooh.
Give me the over in this one as well. This has gone from 51.5 to 48.5. And I think the over hits, and I think Georgia covers. I don't even think this is a contest when the third quarter begins, Mr. Bruns.
I concur. I'll give Georgia a victory, a triumphant one at that, of close to 20. I don't know if I can go with 3 to 4 total scores as you are, Marty, but the over in this instance as well. You don't want to say, you can't possibly say that the Bulldogs have been sleepwalking through the initial portion of the schedule, but so many alarm bells do go off when you consider, especially at QB, and it's not all about the fact that Bennett is no longer there, but all of a sudden you have stretches in which this offense looks entirely ordinary. Mm-hmm. It's human, it's pedestrian, and that snap, that sizzle, that pop just isn't there on a week-to-week basis. It's almost as if the dogs aren't dogging it, but the wake-up call hasn't been levied yet. They've been able to escape. They've been able to turn it on, especially in the second half a couple of weeks ago on the road, and just really biding their time at number one. But boy, is that gap ever closing between Georgia and the rest of the country as far as the rankings, the voters are concerned.
You like Kentucky in this one?
I don't like Kentucky per se, but it is interesting to just observe kind of the trajectory of these respective programs since the very beginning of the season, honestly, and where they are right now. What you do like about Kentucky is that, especially this year, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it's Mark Stoops' 11th year on the job there, right, in Lexington. He's been around for a long time, and this season he has kind of gotten back to the meat and potatoes of a strong ground game and a defense that is pretty suffocating too. Now, when you talk about defending the Bulldogs in that regard, it's not going to be the same, but nonetheless, when you're a defensive unit and you're only permitting in the SEC 2.5 yards per rush, that's nice. Kentucky's also made very nice work of the transfer portal, so I wasn't wowed by such an authoritative victory against Florida, because to be honest with you, I'm still not feeling it with the Gators this season. I'm not. But right now, in the topsy-turvy terrain that is the SEC, especially the SEC East, you have to give Kentucky a little love, give them a little respect, if nothing else.
Rolling with Kentucky to cover. You are right.
Yeah, what was the number overall there?
That's down to 14.5.
14.5. Still can't do it. Still okay. Can't quite do it.
Georgia, what about the over-under? You got a feel on that?
Give me over.
Okay. So Alvin is staying away from the over-under, and he thinks they're going to go there and they're going to cover Kentucky, that is. So Alvin is going with Kentucky and the 14.5. Now, taking a look at my little magazine here, Wazoo, it is happening out in Pullman. They are a real threat. They're a damn good team. They got a good quarterback. Ward is very solid. And they go to UCLA. Let's see. Yeah, they are at Hollywood there. So they go to UCLA. It opened as Wazoo being favored by 1.5. This has moved 4 points. Now Wazoo is getting 3.5 points. And here we go with another over-under that's moved almost 8 points. This started out at 66.5. It's down to 59.5. Listen, this has kind of been a theme thus far with teams we've talked about this podcast. UCLA hasn't played anyone either. Okay, they have not played anyone. Wazoo's going to score a bunch of points in this one. Despite not playing anybody, the competition really not being there, UCLA does have a solid offense still, so I think we're going to see a lot of points in this one. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to hit over 59.5, and I like Wazoo getting 3.5 points.
I also am just skeptical or intrigued by that number, the over-under, mm-hmm. moving to such a degree. I do think the points will fly. The points will come in an abundance, especially in the second half when both teams, are making some adjustments, when you have some defensive breakdowns there as well, but it is as murky as any of the matchups we've detailed on this podcast today, no doubt about it.
Mr. Alvin Reed is rolling with me as well. He is taking Wazoo and the over. Final answer for you, my friend?
I'm going over only on this contest. Okay. I reserve the right to not pick the victor.
Over only on Wazoo game.
If you're pressing me, though, Wazoo.
That's not official, though. Over only for this game for Bradford on the Wazoo game. Over only. Now, cannot wait for these contests to kick off, but want to get to some hardwood real quick because you and I love the NBA.
Let's do it,
and
man.
I just wanted your thoughts real quick because you know I'm a huge Celtics fan. And after that went down with the Bucks a couple weeks ago, I was like, well, you know, they can just punch their ticket to the NBA Finals now.
I wasn't there, but
I was there. So many people would be. Yeah, and the odds changed dramatically in Vegas. And I really, you know, I thought the Celtics would still make the Eastern Conference Finals, maybe lose in five games or six games. But a blockbuster deal went down a few days ago. Now some are saying the Celtics could even be better. I'm not at that point yet, but they bring in... They get rid of two guys I really like with RW3 and Brogdon, but they bring in Drew Holiday, you know, an all-star, a perfect fit for this team.
Perfect fit. You said it.
I think it's a coin flip. It's going to be must-see TV. Diehard Celtics fan here. Hope they get to the NBA Finals. Going to be tough getting past the Bucks. I think they're close to even. But when it's all said and done, Bradford, who do you think the Nuggets will be playing in the NBA Finals this
year. I like how you automatically went to
Bradford,
defaulted
Lakers,
to Denver
Lakers
there.
Fan. Denver. Who comes out of the East, Bradford?
Drew Holiday could not be a more fitting example or model of exactly what the Boston Celtics needed on this team going into the season. Marcus Smart, in order to get, and nobody is even getting into the fact that, oh yeah, Porzingis as the third option, scoring option on the offense. Now it's almost as if that offseason move early on has been overlooked. And of course, when you have a transaction like this that really sends those shockwaves through the association, Holiday displayed to you during the Bucks title run a few years ago. He's a selfless individual. He makes the right basketball play. His basketball IQ is immense, and he will defend for you. He will be a dog in that regard. He doesn't need to. And there can be stretches. That's the thing. He's so skilled offensively. He's so savvy that when Tatum and Brown invariably take over, and at times, maybe to a fault, play a little hero ball for significant stretches, Holiday then seamlessly glides right back in and will give you anything and everything you need, intangibles and otherwise. I love the fit for this team. I still love the Celtics roster top to bottom, even though, as you mentioned, two crucial components, complementary parts have to go to make this work. Depth-wise, you can't convince me that Milwaukee can measure up to Boston right now. And also on the other side, in year one at least, I'm sorry, it's still going to take a little time to figure out how those two, in Giannis and Lillard, work down the stretch. This is not going to be a Kyrie and Luka situation, but it will take time. And it's not going to be a matter of just 20, 30 games. And then, no, you're going to actually have to get into the postseason and see how everything meshes. Continuity-wise, give me the C's all day. For real.
Okay. Well, you know your basketball. And that makes me feel more comfortable. I trust you. I hope the C's get to the NBA Finals. On the other end, we saw Davis and LeBron and Reeves and company. They weren't happy about the jabbing from the Nuggets, which the Nuggets have every right to do that.
Go for it.
Do you think they're not getting any younger. Do you think there's one final run in them this year? Do you think they can get past the Nuggets and make the NBA Finals? Or because they got swept and they got embarrassed in the Western Conference Finals. What do you think about this season? What are your expectations?
It wasn't close last year. We understand that. This is, I don't want to say a radically different team, but the expectations are such that finally the second, third, and fourth options on this club behind LeBron, behind Anthony Davis, they received that valuable experience, and now they know what it is going to have to take in order to knock off the top dog. And coming back after a full season, after a full off season of hearing everybody proclaim and announce just how great you were, everybody now comes at you, meaning Denver, with the best shot imaginable. Los Angeles boasts far greater depth, in my opinion, as far as the overall rotation goes, especially now that Bowen is gone from the Mile High City. Austin Reeves, for as well as he played during the second half of last season, including the playoffs, he took it to a different level. Say what you will about the stage of the World Cup, he took it to a different level, and on most nights, most mornings, afternoons, whatever, he was arguably the best or second best player on that team. He's going to play and give you whatever you need. D'Angelo Russell is a big question mark. But guess what?
You can say that again.
Guess what? He doesn't have it for some nights, for some weeks. How do you like Gabe Vincent coming off the bench? Asserted himself as a terrific player, rotational player for the Heat last year. But going up and down the roster, guys like Rui Hachimura, they grew immensely during the playoff run. And after the Lakers were left for dead after the first month and a half of the season, you never could have projected that they would even be remotely close to doing anything in the playoffs, let alone actually getting to the West Finals. There will be a concerted effort and a concerted effort to push for that number one seed overall in the West. I'm telling you right now, Los Angeles has as good of a shot as anybody, Denver, Phoenix, anybody out West, of being able to actually achieve that. And if you can nail down that number one seed and secure home court advantage throughout the playoffs, anything could honestly happen. And they have enough options on the roster this season to properly, yes, manage some of the minutes for LeBron, for Anthony Davis. Heck, they've got Christian Wood coming off the bench basically as the 10th or 11th guy.
I like Wood.
They've got the pieces, and they understand they are gearing up for one last ride. It's going to be special. I'll leave it at that. It's going to be special.
Oh.
Yep.
So you think we're turning back the clock, Lakers Celtics in the finals?
I seriously do. You know how I love
right.
it. You know how
I'm not
I love
laughing
a good
at
narrative.
That pick. I'm just laughing because that would be awesome.
I really think during the course of the season
that would break some records.
Something
ratings
just
wise.
Tells me Denver is going to have to load up a little bit as the campaign goes along. You would expect some more growth from the likes of a Michael Porter Jr., but Jamal Murray can't play any better. Jokic can't play any better. Okay, Jokic probably can't. But if you're talking about the second unit making a difference in the postseason, we're looking months and months down the road. Give me a better second unit than the Los Angeles Lakers.
Lakers-Celtics Finals, let's go. That would shatter some records, I think. Everybody would be tuning in for that bad boy.
Roll that ball out on the court right now. I am primed and ready.
I'm ready, too. All right, my man. Everybody, thanks for listening. Bradford, great stuff as always, my man, and enjoy the games.
Appreciate it, pal. Until next week.
All right.
Going inside college football, this is the College Football Connection Podcast with Marty Jenkins and Alvin Reed on 101 ESPN.